You already know you're going to eat some of those McDonald's golden fries on the drive home. So, you may as well add an extra order just for that.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre. We've got Bill Goldberg on the phone with us again. And, of course, our buddy Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com. He's in the studio with us. How are you guys?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. So, before we get started, I want to tell you about Geico. And, of course, you want to save some money on car insurance, go to Geico.com. And Dodge, hurry into the Dodge President's Day event for a great deal on Dodge all-wheel drive lineup. And of course, CarCast. CarCast is brought to you by Zybar for better engine performance, horsepower, fuel economy, and lower underhood temperatures. Zybar is an ultra-thin, high-temperature coating that reduces radiant heat by 90%. So put Zybar on, take heat off. You can learn more at Zycoat.com. Zycoat, you know, is the company. Zybar is the product. Check them out at Zycoat.com. All right. So, Bill, I appreciate you calling in. I know you got a busy schedule going on. You were literally on set right now filming new episodes of NCIS Los Angeles, right?
Yeah. And you know, it couldn't be any more fulfilling. I just killed three guys. It was just wonderful. Everybody should do that before lunch.
Right. Sounds fantastic. Looking forward to it. We loved your other episodes. And I like about you, Bill? You're a hustler. You're always on the move.
I'm a hustler, man.
You're a hustler. You like to work.
You gotta be, right?
Right. You like to work. You know, I.
Well,
I
don't know about that. I mean, you know, I
do what you gotta do.
I like to support my car habit, you know, and my wife's horse habit.
That's right.
Dodge is coming out with a new car, obviously, here soon. And I gotta start working for it.
Got to start working for it. Quick update on your rides, because we might have very limited time with you. Anybody can bang on your door and say they need you any minute. So let's just get a quick update on what's been happening. We missed you, I think, last week as well. You were traveling a bit as well. You were traveling, I think, heading to Atlanta or something like that. What's any updates on your rides?
Oh, golly gee. Well, you know, thanks to you and the Expel guys, this week, Expel will be picking my red eye up, the Dodge red eye, mm-hmm. and, you know, doing a little bit of clear bra protection with the ceramic coat on top of it and a little tint action,
nice.
Actually a tint that saves your skin. And not just there for your looks, but, you know, I'm going to try their product out, man. I've seen and heard great things about it. We had him on the show and he sold me on it, and, let's see what we can do. Let's have some fun.
Yeah. So we like those guys. They were very interesting. So, how much are you covering? Are you doing all of the car?
I'm covering the entire car.
So, and they recommended you use their main product, which is a high gloss. On all the painted surfaces, the glossy, triple nickel paint. But then they have a satin bra wrap, like a clear bra satin, on the flat black hood and roof and trunk, right?
Yeah, and you know what? It doesn't do anything but accentuate the look. Mm-hmm. And I suggest to anyone and everyone out there with that type of paint on their car, do yourself some good. And take your elbow grease out of it and wrap the damn thing.
Yeah,
and it'll be a lot easier to take care of. Plus, it'll protect the covering. I mean, it's kind of a no brainer. I haven't had these kind of panels before. Mm-hmm. I haven't dealt with the fingerprints and all that kind of stuff on them, and now I'm seeing the advantage to wrapping them because it is a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I can't wait to check it out. It's gonna look awesome. And like we were saying with those guys, that technology has already come a long way, that it's really tough to notice a wrap, like a good quality clear bra.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough to notice it now because they polish up really pretty nicely now. And anyway, so awesome, man. So that's going to be good. Let's see what else we got going. We got a lot
that's
of stuff to talk
we got,
about.
You know, our buddies at Hellion were awesome and mm-hmm. helped me pick up my 69 Blazer that has been out in the middle of a desert for the last 3 years, basically.
Yeah.
And it is sitting at the house in front of the garage with the 350 sitting in the trunk. So it's in need of a complete restoration. So we'll be figuring out where and the when that thing will be taking off. And I think we may be getting the skinny tire car back from Mooresville here soon. I am maybe going a different route as opposed to the Hellfoot motor, which I don't know if they've gotten their controller yet. I think I'm going to give our boys at Hellion a phone call and see if they want a twin turbo this son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Have some fun.
Because why not? I mean, twin turbo, the Hellcat.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought it lacked power.
Right?
Yeah, you know, why not? Why not? What the hell? And before I forget, since I did do NCIS, since I'm doing it today and the rest of the week, and we all know through these conversations, I usually commute.
Yeah.
I had an absolutely death-defying drive this morning middle of the rain with my semi-drag radials on the back of my charger. And I'm going to hang up this phone and I'm going to get a hotel room and I ain't putting myself through that again.
Oh no. I don't know why you drove that up here. Actually based on, I think some of Alistair's advice, you picked up the Range Rover.
Yeah. Did you buy that in the end?
And the in-laws are in town and they're going to drive around in the Range Rover for the next 3 days. But I can't have it up here. I can't be selfish. You know, I'll just die in the process, but I was actually just going to rent a car,
It's good for the throttle control, though. It's good to...
You really got to feather it. Oh, speaking of feathering the throttle, I think next week we're going to have our friend Leah Pritchett back in the studio. So we're going to talk some drag racing as well. So,
And listen, dude, don't give me any shit because I'll probably show up in the studio for that.
Yeah.
And don't think, even though Leah's a beautiful girl, it's because of that. Okay, it's scheduling. Bill, I may have something next week to shoot for Dodge up in L.A. So
you didn't turn out for me there, Bill. To be fair,
yeah, that's to be fair.
Oh well, you know what? I'm working today, so it was. But Alistair, you know how much I greatly appreciate having you there mentally and visually.
Right on. Oh man, I hate to complain about the rain out here because so many. Other places in this country are getting devastating freezing cold. But you're right. This is our bad day is you're having a hard time driving your drag radials from Southern California to LA.
It's moronic when you listen to it and when I utter it. But it is what it is. Everything's relative.
Well my parents
know, it's not
are
something we deal with all the time, man. And it's not it's the hydroplaning that just mm-hmm. makes your butt pucker. I mean, I aged at least 7 years on the drive up this morning at 3:30. So, never again.
Yeah, my parents are over here from the UK, and I've spent the last year sort of selling California as a place where the sun always shines.
Yeah.
they arrived. It's been like a kind of wet spring day in the UK
just
for a
terrible,
week.
Terrible, right? It's just been terrible.
That's who we can blame for the rain. They brought it here.
They brought it with them.
But I'm taking one for the team and going to the Chicago Auto Show tomorrow when it will be minus a lot.
A lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
Hey.
All right, so we've got some stuff we're going to try to get into. We want to recap CES, maybe a little bit of Detroit Auto Show. You mentioned a 69 Blazer. Well, Chevy's got a new Blazer that Alistair's already driven. Before we kick that off, I'm going to tell you guys about Geico. You've heard this before. Everybody's got a to-do list. You drop off dry cleaning. You pick up some milk. And now you can save hundreds of dollars on car insurance to that list, and you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. Just go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you want some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding to-do you can do today. Check out geico.com. All right, CES. It's, again, we've had this conversation about how more and more car companies are starting to debut cars at different events, things like Rennsport and Goodwood and you know, Monterey Car Week and even E3. And certainly over the years, CES has been a big place to maybe not debut a car, which they do, but debut an entire technology that's going to help lead the sales of cars. I remember, I think it was 2014, Adam and I did CarCast Live in the Ford booth to talk about Ford Sync and some of the technology they were doing back then. So, Alistair, what did you see at CES?
Well, you're right, Matt. It's kind of it's an interesting show because it's really all about TVs and cameras and everything else. In the middle of all this, you've got the automakers not quite sure what to do with it. Do they debut? I mean, Hyundai showed off the Elevate, which was this crazy kind of cross between a robot and a car that has a little electric motor in each wheel, and then it can pick itself up and scramble over objects. And we actually gave it one of our Edmunds Tech Driven Awards, which we were handing out.
I saw it. It looked like it was supposed to be like. You know, travel on the moon or Mars, or it looked like some sort of space vehicle, and
it looked like a kind of modern interpretation of the moon buggy.
Yeah,
but it was cool technology, and there was some good thinking behind it. And then on the other hand, you have manufacturers like Mercedes had the new CLA there, which was kind of like a conventional car launch. The other one that caught our eyes, Byton, which is a Chinese electric car brand, but actually all the engineering and design has been done here in California.
Byton, like
B-Y-T-O-N. And the people behind it are actually, some of it's Faraday Future, which obviously went under, but also a lot of the engineering know-how is ex-BMW. So the CEO was Carsten Breitfeld, who was actually gave the world the BMW i8. So there's a lot of know-how behind it. There's big screens inside, and it's a real Tesla rival. And this thing's coming in. Well, we're going to see a production version later this year. And of all the new electric manufacturers out there, well, probably Byton followed by Rivian are the ones to watch.
Why are we starting to see startup car companies get into the electric space like that? It's so expensive to create a car company. I mean, we've seen what Fisker tried to do. We've seen the amount of cash that a Tesla can go through. Like, why do a startup? Why do a Byton? Why do a Rivian? Why do that as opposed to, I don't know, like,
make a hair dryer or something. Do something
simple.
Or
if you're trying to. If you have some element that you think is super inventive, why not try to take that around to some of the existing companies or some of the existing partners of the big companies, you know, like a Magna or somebody who's making the parts for them? Why not go to those guys and go, I've got some great technology and maybe my little company can develop this, you know, why build a whole car company and why not just focus on a piece of the technology? Like if you got really great, you know, a drive system or battery or charging system, like why not just focus on that? Why have to build a car company from scratch? It seems like a lot of work.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but I think for the first time, I mean, if you think about it, since, you know, the gasoline engine overtook the steam car in around kind of 1900 and something, this is the first time in 120 years that we've actually seen a kind of paradigm shift, that we're actually now looking at different propulsion systems, the world's turning electric, autonomy is on the way. And producing an electric car is so much more simple than producing a gas car and everything that goes with it, building engine. And if you look at what Byton are actually doing, when you break down the components, they're effectively going into a kind of hype, you know, supermarket and picking things off the shelf. So Bosch are heavily involved with it. You look at the brakes, you recognize different brands there. So it's not like they're starting from scratch and doing it all themselves. What they're doing is going into the market and saying, well, we'll have, you know, we'll go to Brembo for the brakes, we'll go to Bosch for this, we'll go for this for the battery, we'll go to Michelin for tires. I'm making brands up, but you get my drift.
Yeah.
So effectively what they're doing is hiring people with experience, like from BMW, and they're going into the market and saying, right, we'll have this, this, and this. So all that Byton is actually doing is a bit of styling, some brand work, and then building the infrastructure to make and sell these things. So it's still a huge undertaking, don't get me wrong, but it is so much easier in the world of electric cars to start a brand from scratch than it was 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah, but you have to add government regulations and crash testing and airbags. And you're right.
Sure,
they can,
it's
they
a big,
can,
it's a big
they
expense.
Can get airbags from somebody else, not Takata, but somebody. and then you know, dealer network and warranties and parts and service. And it's like, what about all the after sales stuff?
For sure. I mean, we've seen from Tesla how they've struggled.
Yeah. But, you know, because those cars break all the time.
And all the warranty and everything else. But, you know, there's a lot of money in China. You know, Biden is Chinese financed. Rivian has a lot of money from the Saudis, and they're not short of cash either, despite all the recent political kerfuffles over there. So there's a lot of people with a lot of money saying, actually, we can get into the market at a really pivotal moment. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say, looking at Ford, I mean, Ford is behind the curve on the electric vehicles, you know, looking at a lot of the established players and saying, you know, they've got massive infrastructure costs. They've got, think about all the healthcare and everything else that goes with being a Ford or a GM, saying, actually, we're lean, we're agile, we can start from scratch. It's a big, big opportunity for them. And I hear your point, but if you've got cash in the bank and you can ride out those first few years, there's a huge opportunity.
Bill, a question for you. What's it going to take to get you to consider an electric vehicle at some point? Is it going to be an electric Porsche?
The Taycan.
Yeah. Or would it be an electric F-150, which they're going to be doing?
No, it's going to be that Porsche.
It's going to be the
Porsche,
right?
I think I'm just going to go ahead and put that deposit down if they'll still take them, and add myself to the list. There's no question that will be the first electric car in my stable.
Yeah. Now, when you look at that car, you can't skip over the Audi, because the Audi largely based on the Porsche platform, right?
Yeah. I mean, the e-tron, I mean, this is where the big groups, you know, Audi, Porsche can share a lot of technologies behind the scenes, and that'll make a difference. The other interesting thing was coming, I had in the office yesterday, the guys from Lotus.
Yeah.
And Lotus has been, you know, some wonderful brand equity. We all think of Senna and Jim Clark and all that sort of thing. And they are now owned by Geely, which is another Chinese brand, which owns Link, but also owns Volvo as well, and Polestar, which is Volvo's new electric luxury brand. So they've added now Lotus to the portfolio. And if you think about that, Volvo, you know, you've got a Chinese startup brand plus Volvo plus Polestar plus Lotus. And Lotus have got really ambitious plans. And
they always have, though.
You've heard it all before, right? But this time, it's not Proton, it's Geely.
But this time.
Yeah, this time somebody else is paying for it.
This time there is proper investment, and it's exciting. It really is.
I guess it'll be interesting to see what comes from them. I like the idea of electric cars using electrification for increased performance. You know, maybe not unworldly stuff, not like LaFerrari P1 McLaren, but I'm talking like NSX and things like that. Like, and there's been sort of, for a long time, there was sort of Chevy Volt, Chevy Bolt, and then the supercars. And now it's starting to trickle into, like you said, like Tesla and stuff. But I was over here at the Super Bowl party and was talking to, a bunch of the guys, and Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy's lovely wife, Molly, and she has a Jimmy rolled up in an S63 Mercedes, and Molly had a Model X. And, they both loved them for different reasons. And she said, you know, she likes the Tesla, likes what it represents, loves that it's electric. She had a couple buggy things with the doors not opening all the way or opening, you know, this and that. And she said, what would you say? What would you recommend? And I said, this is the year. This year and next year, start to pay attention to where all the car companies we are used to are going to start making a big play. And maybe they've sort of just been kind of gearing up, but you can't look over the fact, like Bill said, like the Porsche and the Audi e-tron and, you know, what BMW is going to be doing and what Ford's going to be doing in an F-150. Like, these guys have been making cars for 100 years. What's their take going to be on the all-electric car, you know, because we have these companies that are the startups, the Teslas, the Rivian, the Byton, you know. Okay, but what happens when companies that have been doing this for a while and they just have things like the after-sales network in place, and they have the deals in place, like you said, with the Michelins and the Brembos of the world, you know, they've got those relationships so they can focus a little bit more on the technology and not have to reinvent the wheel per se on the car itself. They can take existing platforms. You can take, for example, a Panamera platform and start making your Taycan or Taycan or whatever it's going to be called, you know, and you know, because they, at the very least, companies like Porsche, they have a certain performance benchmark that, you know, all the Porsches need to reach a certain amount of performance just to be called a Porsche, right? And they have that experience. So my advice was, hey, let's not ignore the big car companies coming out with their significant electric vehicles.
It is. I think this is a really big year for Tesla, mm-hmm. particularly, because it reminds me, it's a silly example, it reminds me of, you guys heard of TVR in the UK?
Yeah,
TVR
sure.
was this fabulous, they made, if you were to drive from like, you know, if you gave me a car for a day, you'd take a TVR because they were loud, they were obnoxious, they were fiberglass and everything else. And they suddenly became a really culty following and they got to about building 1,500 cars a year. And then as soon as they hit that threshold, it stopped being guys like us who will accept things going wrong mm-hmm. and became, you know, city guys, that sort of thing, who expected it to start and expected nothing to go wrong. And as soon as they hit that threshold, they were talking to people who wouldn't tolerate faults. And then the Boxster came along and everyone's, oh, I really want a TVR, but can I trust it? And then will it, you know, when I want to go to the airport, will it start? And so suddenly, you know, everybody bought a Boxster and that was the end of TVR. And in some ways, you can kind of see that with Tesla. Tesla's at a real tipping point because as soon as Audi, Mercedes, Porsche, all of whom will launch this year in the market, are people going to stick with Tesla? Are there enough fanboys out there to keep saying, I want the Model 3, I want the Model 3, when, you know, there are other great alternatives out there? We're actually doing an interesting piece of work, which we're going to launch shortly, looking at properly measuring EV range and EV efficiency. Now, everybody talks about range, 200 miles, 250 miles. But what we're starting to measure is efficiency, so equivalent of miles per gallon.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting because you suddenly start, as people start to think about what they're paying in electricity, then the efficiency, how much juice you're putting back in your car every night, becomes quite significant. And we're doing a big piece of work looking at the true cost of having electric vehicles.
Yeah, so I think you guys touched on that. Talk about mainstream car companies. Jaguar's already out there with the I-Pace, and I think Dan Edmonds was driving the I-Pace, and he was talking about why it was just eating so much power. Basically, it's just like it met the range requirements. It did what it said it was going to do. It was fast. It was nice. It was comfortable, and it looked like a Jag, and it looked good. But it wasn't as efficient, I think he was saying. And I don't know how you guys are going to break it down. You're going to have to sort of educate us on,
you are, I mean,
on
you
what you're going to be doing.
But you basically end up with an equivalent of MPG, and not call it MPG because that's a bit of a misnomer. But you're right about the Jag. I mean, you can solve range by just bolting on an ever bigger battery, but that adds cost and it adds weight, neither of which is desirable. So what you want is efficiency. Then we're back into the old world of lightweight and aerodynamics and all the things that go with making a gas car efficient.
Yeah.
So that's a really interesting piece of work, and things are changing so fast. I mean, it is a really exciting time, and you know, much as we still enjoy GT500s and everything else.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, I was in
twin turbo Hellcats.
I was at the Detroit Auto Show, and you know, you looked around. And actually, CES was an interesting one because Ford had a stand there. And Ford's kind of corporate identity recently has been about shipping containers. And you're in the middle of CES, you're surrounded by all this crazy tech, the LG with these crazy screens and everything else.
Yeah.
And then Ford has got shipping containers, and it just looks so old school.
Yeah.
You know, it just looked like this was like, time had gone.
Yeah.
And then you turn to Detroit and GT500, and we're going to love that car. Of course we are. 700 horsepower, all the rest of it. But there is a kind of feeling now that it is a bit, you know, it's a time that's passed.
Yeah. Well, I saw the GT500 in Scottsdale at the Barrett Jackson auction, and the time has not passed. That car is badass.
Do you know what really worries me about that car? Where it's really irritating, and it's the same with the 911 Touring as well for the Porsche. Yeah. Is that if you want the track pack version, you want like the full one, they take out the rear seats. And I have a kid on the way, so I want the rear seats back.
Well, and you could just buy the rear seat, just put it back in.
You can't in the Porsche. I don't know whether you can in the GT. I'm trying to find an answer on the GT500.
Anything could be done. Anything could be done. Look, I love the GT500, and because it creates, it still creates that rivalry. Now we can have all the great articles and tests of GT500 versus Red Eye, and you know, and we like that stuff. It's fun
for sure.
You know, it's fun to see that stuff. And it that sort of creative competition is what we love in between the companies, you know?
Definitely.
And we thought it was gone for a number of years, and thank God it is not.
But yeah.
How long will it be here?
But how do you feel about a GT500 without a stick shift, Bill?
Yeah, this thing's going to be paddle only.
Yeah, I think that's a... I think it's the same as the Red Eye without the stick shift. You know, I'm not a fan by any stretch. I want to bang through the gears. It's just a more fun experience, man. And I can't believe that they'd let something out like both of those vehicles without the option.
Yeah. Wait, so the Red Eye doesn't have a stick? You can't get it with stick?
It does not. Nope.
You see, everybody's talking about performance, but missing the point that these things, you know, these things ultimately, they are about going fast in a straight line, but frankly, you go by a Porsche or something, if it's all about track performance, it's about having fun and an old world experience. Interesting. It'd be interesting what the collector market does as well, because I was thinking this GT500, probably the last with, you know, with a massive, really crazy supercharger and everything else before electrification comes. So actually, is this the one to buy and to wrap up in cotton wool and all the rest of it? But actually, maybe the last one is, you know, the last stick shift GT500.
Yeah. Yeah, which was a fantastic car as well. Yeah.
Interesting thought.
Yeah, it is going to be kind of interesting. You're right. They have to go after a performance number, but you do take a little bit of that fun out of it, you know? Like, they could say, oh, we have a, you know, GT500, and let's say it runs 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds. But if you get the manual transmission, it runs 4.1. I don't care.
I don't care either.
I don't care.
Exactly.
You know, I don't care if it's a half a second slower. I don't care.
If we just check out our YouTube channel at the moment, Carlos Lago and the team has just done a comparison at our test track between a GT3 with the paddles and a GT3 with the stick. And yet it's a fraction slower. And a lot of that is actually less in the gear change and more launching it off the line. But it's a great film because he really makes the point of how much more fun he's having. And the difference in performance is so marginal.
Yeah.
It's a good film. Check it out.
I would imagine that the Porsches, the difference is going to be fractions. But when you get into, you know, to the cars that Bill and I love, the big heavy muscle cars and stuff, I think it's going to be, it will have more of a difference in it, just because of the car and, you know, just the lack of traction and things like that the computer can kind of really take control over when you get into the paddle shift version of it. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I mean, it's still going to be great. And we're still going to love them. But it is interesting that. And by the way, I mean, the GT500, we're saying it's a 7-speed automatic, but I sort of define, you have your paddle shifted cars. I just sort of define the automatic as something with a torque converter in it, whereas the GT500 is a dual clutch 7-speed manual that's paddle shifted. You know, it's, and I believe Tremec, the guys who've been making their transmissions, I've got a 6-speed Tremec in mine, in my Cobra that I swapped in. It's a Tremec 7-speed that they've developed their first paddle shifted, you know, 7-speed. So, my thought is, it should be fairly easy to make it a manual. If you wanted to make a manual, I'm sure you're going to find one at SEMA or something. Someone's going to make a manual swap kit for it. But, you know, but for the people that want to drag race the GT500, you're right. The paddle shift is going to be the fastest thing out there.
Yeah, and the problem is all tied to the electronics and everything else these days. So just bolting a manual back into it is not an easy job.
Oh, it'll be done.
It'll be done.
It'll be done. I want to talk a little bit about the Detroit Auto Show as well. But first, I'm going to tell you guys some more about Zycoat. You know, there's a lot of engines out there, and they place the hot components real close to the air intakes. You get manifold and exhaust right by the intake, by plug wires, by the carburetors, brake lines, power steering lines, and it creates all this heat, and heat is the enemy of speed. It robs horsepower. Before, your only options were wraps, tapes, and ceramics. Now there's Zybar, a DIY high-temp coating that reduces radiant heat by 90%. This is a resin-based polymer formula that withstands temperatures far in excess of what the engine environment can create, and it costs about a third of what ceramic coating would cost. A single application of Zybar to your manifold, exhaust system, or headers will control heat, resulting in higher horsepower and torque. CarCast listeners can receive 15% discount plus free shipping on all orders. Just enter the promo code CARCAST when you purchase at Zycoat.com. That's Z-Y-C-O-A-T.com. Use promo code CARCAST. Get 15% discount plus free shipping. So, good. Check that out. All right. Detroit Auto Show. We talked about the GT500. In previous episodes, we talked about the Supra. And, you know, our feeling on the Supra is people don't necessarily love the looks. We hope it represents the old car. Before we spend a bunch of time on the Supra, we need a drive. we need to drive that car and find out. And I'm sure you guys are going to get it before we do. So
yeah, we'll get into that pretty quickly. I mean, if you think about what's underneath it, it's a BMW Z4, which is, you know, it's not a bad place to start. 335 horsepower. A lot of people have said that's not enough, and you know it's $50,000 car. And you look what else you can buy out there with more horsepower. I mean, I'm a bit of a believer that it's not all about horsepower, and if this 335 is probably enough in that size of car if you've got it really handling and really working for you. It's a tricky one for them because you're right. The reaction to the way that it looks has been pretty universally negative.
Yeah. But I mean, I saw the car at Bear Jacks, and there was a few things I liked. There was a few things that I didn't like. I thought the back looked pretty good. The sort of side vent that it has going on, when I got up on it, I realized it's fake and it's got some fake honeycomb grill blocked out. That's bullshit to me. I don't like the fake grill stuff. And that's coming from a Mustang guy, right? You know, but they put a lot of attention into a 50-50 weight distribution, and it's a straight six, right? Turbo straight six.
Yeah, it's the BMW engine. Yeah,
you know, which is a fantastic engine, and the fact that you're with a turbo again, like the old Supra, it seems very easy at this point to probably start getting into that engine and upgrading turbos and adding boost, and you know, so I'm sure you're a tune away, just you know, from another 30-40 horsepower, you know, and that's it. You're probably a cold air intake and a tune away from.
And I think Toyota themselves will do that. There'll be a TRD version, I'm sure, yeah. in due course. And you know, it's an obvious way. We'll do a triple test. So I mean, probably have the Cayman in there. It's interesting that market because also things like the latest M2, the BMW come into it. So it's not just a Z4. You're also those little coupes, yeah, and things like that. So coupes, I should say. But
now, is the Supra not going to have a manual as well?
No, that's not going to have a manual, I believe, yeah.
So, yes, no manual.
Correct, yes.
No manual.
Double negative, but yes, yeah. No manual.
What did you just say?
I don't know.
No manual in a Supra, Bill. Come on.
Unreal.
Right?
There will be a manual version of, we just driven the new 911, the 992 as well, and at the moment that's just a Carrera S with the paddles, but there is a manual version coming of that.
Yeah.
There will be a manual GT3, and it's... It serves a niche, doesn't it? But it's a diminishing niche.
Look, now I get what Porsche did, right? They said, here's the new car. Everything is a little bit better, a little tighter, a little faster, because they released it with the PDK transmission or whatever the new version is. If they released it with a manual, they would say, well, it's not as fast as the other car. So they had to go with the fast version now, and then they can do the enthusiast version. But yeah, with this new Porsche platform, I am looking forward to new turbo. Everything's turbo, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Turbo yeah. with a capital T.
Yeah, yeah, turbo with a capital T. And GTS.
GTS is normally the one. It normally comes a couple of years later, but it's normally the one to
That's
to,
the
to
one
go
to
for.
Get, right? Because usually you're getting like a lot of the cool turbo options. You get some cool, you know, Alcantara bits on the inside. And the previous gen, you got the center lock wheels. So the turbo didn't have center lock wheels, but the Turbo S did. Now you have to spend $180,000 to get center locks, or you get a GTS and it has the center lock. So you're right. It's the bang for the buck. But I've always thought it always has been the bang for the buck in the Porsche lineup. You even think of the Cayenne.
Yeah.
You know, what was first gen Cayenne GTS?
And the Macan as well. Yeah. GTS is fabulous. But they also, as an investment, I was looking at 997, which is the previous last full generation, 911 before the 991, and then now we're on to 992. And yeah, GTS hold their value really well because if you're starting to go from being an old car to a collector car, like a late model 997 GTS is worth a lot more than just an S.
So now all the Porsches are turbo, but the naming convention is, you know, Carrera, you have an S, 4S, and you'll have a turbo,
yeah,
which is the more power version, but that's just because they've always done that. Are we going to get a Taycan at a Taycan turbo?
Yes.
We are.
We are.
We're going to get a Taycan turbo.
We are absolutely going to get a Taycan turbo.
It's not going to have
like
a turbo.
Five levels of them, I think.
Yeah, right? It's just going to be the longer, yeah, more powerful range, longer range, more powerful, you know, like the Tesla P100D or whatever. We're going to have the Taycan turbo.
Yeah.
They which would be interesting. I'd love to see somebody do, because there's no real changing gears in the electric car, you know, but a manual gear changing electric car could be.
You'd have to fake it up, wouldn't you? It'd be interesting. Yeah.
Well, yeah, there's this company that does an electric conversion on C7 Corvettes. We saw them up at Gordon McCall's deal up in Monterey. And I mean, they take a $70,000 Corvette and they turn it into a $450,000 Corvette, but it's an electric motor in the front where the conventional engine goes, and it mates up to the 7-speed manual transmission, and you do shift gears.
Jeez.
And I don't know
That'd be interesting.
And I'm curious how to drive it. I mean, I know it's a beefy driveline because we can make 1,000 horsepower with these things. Our buddy Ken Lingenfelter can make 1,000 horsepower with these things, but you got to think about the wear and tear on that driveline with that amount of torque. And if you can shift that thing hard enough, what does it do?
Well, that might also talk about why the GT500 hasn't got a stick as well, that they're worried about how people drive it as well and all the warranty and everything else.
They could just break shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how they're skimming. Like, I was looking at Car Week last year about electric E-Type as well, which looked really cool, but, you know, again, crazy money.
Yeah, so there's going to be a Taycan turbo. It won't really be a turbo, but it'll be, you know, the name of the fast version of it.
Yeah.
Is it Taycan?
Taycan Turbo. Taycan with a Taycan.
It's so weird.
I just call it a Mission E and get on with it.
Mission E worked for me.
It was such a good name. I was talking to I talked to some Porsche people at Porsche, and they tend to agree, but we'll never say so publicly.
Like, who makes the decisions? Anyway, all right, let's get into
Stuttgart.
Detroit Auto Show stuff. What's going on there?
Well, it was an interesting show. It was the last one ever to be in January. Next year it moves to June. Yeah, the last one getting
because they want people to show up other than the press.
It was kind of sad, you know. There was no. I mean, I've been going to that when I was still based in the UK. I was going every year, and this year no European press. You really got a sense it had this real end of the century feeling about it. Mercedes.
Why do you think that happened? I read about that. Why do you think it happened?
The biggest thing, Bill, is it's just so expensive to do auto shows. It's crazy. It costs, you know, I think at the last Frankfurt Auto Show, Audi, or the one before, Audi spent like 200 million euros or something insane. So it's horrifically expensive to do. I mean, Ford can drop $1 million on a press conference alone, and that's a 15-minute press conference. So what you're seeing now is in the world of Instagram and digitally, you know, you can talk to an audience so much easier directly. And if you spend a couple of million dollars on Instagram, you probably get more results than a press conference at Detroit. And it's a bit of a shame. So, I mean, auto shows have always worked for two reasons. One, the media coverage. And secondly, just having, you know, hundreds of thousands of consumers go through it. But they both need to work together, and unfortunately, a lot of manufacturers now are saying they can just spend their money better elsewhere. So Detroit is trying to reinvent itself, launch in June, and do more kind of experiential stuff. So instead of just having static vehicles, you'll be able to, you know, do little drivey events and all that sort of thing around it, because June makes it easier. But it's also, in terms of Detroit, it's a market thing. So if you're a luxury brand, I think the luxury market in Michigan is like 1.2%. So if you're Mercedes or Audi or any of those guys, why would you pay all those millions of dollars to be in Detroit? You're better off being in New York or LA. So I don't think auto shows are dead. It's just that Detroit will have to kind of reimagine itself. And I think they've got 1 or 2 years to pull it off. If not, it's going to be quite a regional show, which is a real shame because it was the iconic start to the year.
Well, I mean, what's interesting, though, is
the downfall of the car culture again.
I mean, at least the traditional car show. I mean, Ferrari hasn't shown up at the LA Auto Show in years, and this is a huge market for them.
Yeah, and they do Geneva, but even Geneva, there's no Ford, there's no Jaguar Land Rover. Europe has two big shows: Geneva in March, and then either Frankfurt and Paris alternate in October. And you know, I went to Paris last year; that was down. It's changing times. It really is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there has to be something good over that show.
There was some interesting stuff. I mean, obviously the Supra launched there. We saw some heavy duty trucks. The Ram heavy duty with a thousand pound feet of torque.
It tows like 35,000 pounds.
And we've just had Dan Edmonds actually literally overnight on the Chevy Silverado heavy duty.
Yeah,
and that is now claiming we can tow an extra like 500 pounds, and it's got a bit more. So it's obvious that they've heard that in Detroit, and they go, just turn the boost up, or you know, yeah, twiddle with the transmission, or do something just to for one upmanship. So you know, truck market continues to be huge. It's huge for us at Edmonds. That was exciting. Back into some of the real world. Cadillac had an XT6, which is a big three-row SUV. I'm not sure where Caddy is at the moment. That was pretty disappointing. It just looked like a, you know, slightly tarted up Chevy, to be honest. Lexus had a couple of tuner cars.
Is Cadillac selling? Is Lincoln selling? I feel like Lincoln is up their game. I don't know if it's translating to sales, but you look at the new Lincolns, you look at the Cadillacs, and I got to tell you, the Lincolns are kicking the shit out of Cadillac as far as styling and luxury appointments. And
I think you're absolutely right. I think Lincoln have just suddenly set on who and what they are. The Navigator is a great vehicle if you've got a big family, and yeah, it's a $70,000 plus vehicle, but it works. It's what an American luxury brand should be. Aviator looked good. You know, Cadillac, they just fired their CEO. They've moved from New York back to Detroit. And, you know, that, yeah, when you look at Lincoln.
So they're going after it. I feel like Cadillac and Lincoln both have like one last hurrah in them. Like if they don't pull it off with these new cars, I don't know where they're going to go.
What I think's interesting, guys, is you look at a list of the top 10 least selling cars over the past, I think it was last year, and Corvette's on there. They sold 18,000 units in 2018. And then I know Lincoln's on there. I don't know if it's a Navigator or that four-door car. But those are pretty astonishing numbers. And there are a couple cars on that list that are going to floor both of you guys. I mean, Alistair, you'll probably know, but there's a couple on there that are pretty amazing. And that Corvette was one of them. I mean, did you guys think that would be one of the top 10 least sold cars last year?
It's an interesting market, because to some extent you can skew the market by, you know, how much incentives you give and what price you want to sell at and everything else. But you're right. And then you look at the truck market and still, you know, 800,000-900,000 units a year, and it's huge numbers. I mean, when we look at the traffic to our site, which is always a great barometer of where, you know, who's buying what, everything is SUVs. That kind of mid-sized compact SUV is just huge. That's what people want. That's what people are.
But I remember you in studio a year ago, and we were talking about SUVs might be, you know, the big ones. No, actually, we were talking about the fact that they were on their way back in, because we thought with the onset of the electric cars that, you know, they were weeding out the SUV. You know, don't be driving the big gas guzzler cars. And now, Jesus Christ, I mean, look how many of them are still on the road.
Well, interesting. I can't speak today. Ford's first electric vehicle, which is supposed to take a bit of inspiration from the Mustang, and some of us thought would be a coupe, is going to be an SUV. So, you know, it's not, we're bringing electrification, we're bringing autonomy and that sort of thing, but still the love affair with the SUV will continue.
Well, first of all, I think it makes sense for Ford to get into the crossover, you know, the small SUV, the compact SUV, and the SUV market with electrification, because it's expensive to do that, and you need volume. And you're right, like to do a Corvette and sell 18,000-20,000 a year with an electric motor doesn't make any sense. You're never going to make any money. But if you can sell 350,000, you know, SUVs with some electrification, you know, great. And if at the end of the day, like we had this long conversation with Lincoln a while back, and we had the Lincoln guy call in and talk about the technology, and he's like, yeah, we got a new Lincoln Aviator. It's a three-row, gorgeous. And he's like, yeah, it's 400 horsepower with the turbo V6, or 450 horsepower with the turbo V6 and the electric motors. And I was like, okay. And we're like, well, let's break it down. The fuel efficiency of it. He goes, well, the hybrid version gets a smaller fuel tank, so we can put a battery in there, right? And I was like, okay. And he goes, but then the range overall will be about the same as the gas engine was. So you either get a big fuel tank and go 400 miles, or you get the little fuel tank with the battery and you go 400 miles on a tank of gas plus the charge. And he goes, it just depends on where you want to do. Now, the big difference to me, the selling point was, is the hybrid Lincoln version does get that performance boost. And again, yeah. I like electrification for performance as well. If you can get a more fuel efficient SUV like the Aviator hybrid, but then also when you want to put your foot into it, you get an extra, you know, 50 horsepower and like 200 yeah. pound feet of torque.
And instantly.
And yeah. instantly, yeah, then I think that thing's going to be cool.
I agree with you. And it's also about build. At CES, I hosted a panel looking at the future of all this rideables and car sharing and everything else. And on it, there was somebody from Lime, you know, the little scooter companies and Lyft yeah. and everything else. And it was a really interesting discussion. One of the points is about, oh, you know, Ford has stopped selling cars and all. Now it's about these giant SUVs and they're not as safe for pedestrians and the guzzle fuel and all this other thing. It's like, well, it's fine. But if people aren't buying sedans, if, you know, you can't build cars that people yeah. don't want to buy. And this is what's driving the market. And it's still a challenge with electric vehicles, but, you know, we're getting there. And it's as you say, I think the Taycan will be interesting. We've seen some cool stuff from Tesla, the I-Pace. I personally like it. It's an interesting time, and these things are fun to drive, even if you miss the growl.
Turning the page a little bit, all the news that came out recently is bringing back a Chevy Blazer. I think it's fantastic they bring back that name, but does the vehicle hold up to that name?
Well, I actually drove it last week, and we've just done a big test on it, and you can check that out on our site at the moment. But for me, it's a disappointment. I think the idea of this, and a bit like the Honda Passport as well, is that something a bit more masculine, a bit more alpha of an SUV. So you already have the Equinox, but what you wanted to do was something that took it in a slightly different direction. And it almost felt like they were trying to do the coupe for a guy who now needs an SUV. So how do you take the Camaro and apply it to an SUV? And I thought that could be kind of fun. But having driven it, it's almost like they bottled it. It just feels pretty generic. The interior has hints of the Camaro about it, but not enough. It doesn't feel particularly sporty to drive. It's not a kind of $30,000 Porsche Macan. I just thought it was a bit dull, and that was a shame. I think anybody thinking – it'll be interesting to see what Ford does with the Bronco when they bring that back. But anybody thinking that Chevy was going to go and produce something really characterful and different and try and grab a different sector of the market, if that was the intention, I don't think they've nailed it.
Right, so it's not really standing out. I mean, could there be? Could they do a Chevy Blazer SS or some kind of hotter version? Is the platform there?
Well, they've got an RS which looks a bit more aggressive, and that wasn't the one I drove. But I'm not sure the hardware's there, and I'm not sure the will is there. But we'll see.
Yeah, well.
Gentlemen,
yes.
Do you think it's counterproductive for these companies to bring back, you know, their namesake, the Blazer, the Bronco, and just completely bastardize it? Don't you think they should have renamed it?
I think it depends.
And not pissed off all the people that were thinking that they were getting a taste of the old?
I think it's all about the execution, Bill. I think when we see the Bronco, I suspect that the Bronco will be much more charming and will be much more kind of retro in feel and interesting. And I think we're seeing that with things like the Volkswagen Microbus as well, which might come back as an electric bus, but will take a lot of the character. The original Mini did a pretty good job. So I think it's all about the execution. And the yeah. problem, I think, is when you make a promise that you don't deliver on, that's where it falls apart.
Right. From a marketing yeah, perspective.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what the final product looks like from Ford with that Bronco.
Right. From a marketing and a PR perspective, there is definite value in brand equity. Like bringing back a Ford Taurus if it didn't suck, and bringing back a Blazer if it didn't suck.
But like Alistair said with the Blazer, I mean, it doesn't hold a candle to what it was in the past. So why call it a Blazer and piss all the people off that are thinking that Blazer is coming back?
Maybe they added the Blazer name after the fact. It was the Chevy Phaser, and they're like, no one's going to buy this thing. It's not that good, and the name is dumb. Like, let's at least call it a Blazer, see if we can sell 10% more.
I mean, the big one that will be launched this year is the Land Rover Defender.
Yeah,
you know, that is a tough that is a tough ask. And also they're launching a massive SUV, you know, massive off-roader into a market which is changing fast. So it's that'll be an interesting one.
I'm all in on a Land Rover Defender. If everything's analog, there's not one electric piece on that thing.
But you know it's not
going to
be.
And if it's under 100 grand.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think neither of those things will be true.
None of those things are going to be true.
Exactly. We'll write it off simultaneously, man.
Well, yeah, right? Speaking of, though, as much as I still love the Range Rovers, I love the look of those things, and I love all the fast, hot versions, the ridiculous trucks they make, you know, the Range Rover Sport SVR, and Alistair and I were talking today, the new that came out as we're recording this is the Land Rover Velar SV autobiography.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Sorry. I just got the knock.
All right. We're wrapping up here anyway. Thanks, Bill. We'll talk to you later.
Cheers, Bill.
You got it, gentlemen. Love you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. It sounded like he was making a sandwich the whole time.
I just like the idea of him sitting in his trailer. It's so Hollywood, isn't it?
Yeah. He was shuffling around the whole time.
I'm calling from my trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It's so Hollywood. love Bell. I'm glad he was able to call in. He was nervous. I talked to him yesterday. He's like, I'm on the set. I don't know if I can do it. Let me see if I can do it. And I texted him. He's like, call. Let's do it. But glad he called in. Sorry he was trying to get work done while he's doing it. You can hear him shuffling around. I don't know what he's doing. He's probably having a protein shake or something. Maybe lifting weights. You know, got to get your pump on for the next scene if you're going to kill somebody. Anyway, Land Rover Velar SV autobiography. I like the Velar. I think it's a good LA-sized SUV.
Yeah.
And the multiple screens are cool if everything works. It's got a real kind of fresh, sleek look to it. When I drove it, I drove one that was like a launch edition or first edition. It was like 90 grand. It's a little rough, 90 grand. And I wanted a little more pep, so they came out with this one, which is 550 horsepower.
So I think they've got the F-Pace SVR coming out. F-Pace SVR, which will be about 80 grand.
They've been showing it, and they haven't
which is the same,
done it yet.
Same engine. And then this, I think they've really layered on the... Because what they never want to do is kind of make the two compete. So they're going to layer on the luxury, but you still get the power. But it'll be 100 grand processors. But they're not giving a price, which is a bit of a telltale sign. So this is going to be probably north of 100 grand. And it's a load of money. And I don't know if you saw the news this week that Range Rover were going to build the Range Rover Coupe, which was going to be about $250,000.
Yeah, but they're not going to do that now.
And now they've cancelled it. So they've blown a load of money. I mean, JLR, unfortunately, in the UK is laying off a lot of people and cutting costs. And, you know, they've been hit by a triple whammy of Chinese market is diminishing. Mm-hmm. Diesel across the world. I mean, it's never big here, but in Europe it was huge. They were completely wedded to diesel. That's diminishing. Then there's all the uncertainty around Brexit in the UK and everything else. So it's a kind of triple whammy, and they're in a tough place right now. I mean, I'm off to Chicago tomorrow for the auto show where they're going to launch the Evoque in the US, which they launched on Thanksgiving in the UK, which is a really great PR move.
All right. Love it. Well, geez, that sounds like a terrible cold trip. Speaking of cold, let me guys tell you about some Dodge stuff. Again, snow or ice, rain or shine, we've got that here. Dodge's all-wheel drive lineup is ready for anything the winter throws at you. Join the Brotherhood of Muscle at Dodge's President's Day event and get a great deal on your winter ready Dodge. I feel like that's what Bill needed was.
You are the king of the Segway.
Right? Nailed it. All right, we're going to wrap things up. You've got a meeting to go to.
Just for a change.
And there you go. Bill's going to go beat people up on NCIS Los Angeles. Look forward to that. We'll give you guys some updates on when that's going to air. Of course, you can follow Alistair Weaver. He's Alistair Weaver on Twitter. He's Weaver Alistair on Instagram. Go to Edmunds.com. Everything we talk about here is pretty much up on that site. And you go to Edmunds.com/roadnoise, I think, and it's good.
For all your latest editorial, that gives a roundup of all the latest news and everything we're talking about.
Great recap stuff, bunch of fun videos and stuff up there. And are we going to see a video or a test write-up on the Blazer?
The Blazer's up already, so head to edmunds.com/roadnoise or check out our YouTube channel as well. You can see it. You can see it there. So there's the full written review and the video to accompany it as well.
Excellent, thank you. Of course, you guys can follow Goldberg. You know where he is. He's Goldberg and Goldberg Garage on Twitter. He's Goldberg95 and Goldberg's Garage on Instagram. Definitely follow the Instagram stuff. All the cool car stuff is up there. You can follow me at Moderator. I'm on all the social medias. And CarCast Show. We got all kinds of good stuff up there. If you like the show and it's good, you guys, you're getting into it. We're starting to get our groove, right?
Yeah.
Then go to iTunes, give us a nice little review. We love that. Tell a friend. We'll grow the show. All right, guys. We're good. We're wrapping up here for Chris. Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys. Also, we have a car show coming up March 10th. Bring your rides over to the Peterson Museum. Just go to adamcarolla.com to get more info on that.
Yeah, it's a 10th anniversary of the Adam Carolla Show, but they keep forgetting in the notes. 10th anniversary of CarCast. 10 years CarCast. We're doing a huge car show. I want every car on the planet to be there because the Peterson is huge, and if we got 30 cars, it's going to look empty. So I want 1,000 cars, 1,500 cars.
Yeah, I think Leno's only bringing one. So
yeah. Leno's going to be there. He's bringing a car. Our buddy Mike Brewer from Wheeler Dealers is bringing a car.
I did a TV show with Mike about 10 years ago.
Did you?
In the UK.
Well, he's going to be there. You should go there. You should bring a car. You should come to the event. I'll be there. Adam and I are going to judge some cars. We're going to do a People's Choice Award. We're going to give out some trophies. And I don't know if I'm supposed to say anything yet, but I'm pretty sure our buddy Michael Anthony from Van Halen, he's going to be there. He's going to bring a car. We're just talking to him about that right now. And we're going to just keep getting more people to go. It'll be fun.
Great.
Go to adamcarolla.com. Of course, the peterson.org has it on their event page as well. All right, guys. Thank you. Until next time, keep the air and the spare in the bag and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on carcastshow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com. You already know you're going to eat some of those McDonald's golden fries on the drive home. So, you may as well add an extra order just for that.